She-Wolf by Her Majesty, read by X-Man-Hater. Summary. Chrissy Cunningham has been 18 for 4 months. Chrissy Cunningham hasn't had her period in 2 years and hasn't come into her designation. With help from a nurse in an Indianapolis care clinic, Chrissy Cunningham is about to take back control of her life. February 1985.
It's good to see you, Miss Cunningham.
The nurse at the Indianapolis clinic is of the non-offensive sort. When Chrissy isn't looking at her own shoes, she's admiring the woman's curls, tucked as they are into a bun at the base of her neck. She focuses on the few trying to escape in an attempt to keep from biting her bottom lip.
I have to ask you a few questions to establish your baseline health, the nurse continues.
She looks at Chrissy over her glasses, her gaze assessing but friendly. Chrissy winces as the nurse's gaze stutters over her collarbone, her wrists, her ankles, all sharp edges on a too small frame. Laura Cunningham once said that her daughter was built to be a cheerleader, and while that's not wrong, it's not quite right either. Chrissy thinks she looks closer to the jockeys in the Kentucky Derby these days. The comparison is not the most flattering.
Designation? The nurse asks, her voice gentle.
I don't know yet, Chrissy says to her shoes. The nurse furrows her brow.
Any concerns regarding your sexual health? Are you sexually active?
A flush flies across Chrissy's cheeks. She glances toward the door. Her mother is some odd meters away, waiting impatiently in the room's stiff-backed chairs, if she hasn't snuck her way past the front desk to press her ear against the door.
I've just received a call from Mrs. Carver, her mother had said not 2 days ago.
Her mouth had been curled with some manner of distaste, but Chrissy can't remember a time when it hadn't been.
I think it's time for us to test your designation, dear. We shouldn't make a good mate like Jason wait much longer for you to present, should we?
Miss Cunningham, the nurse says, anything you tell me in this room will remain confidential. I will not tell your parents, and your parents do not have the right to ask me any questions. Chrissy takes a deep breath. She grips the edge of her skirt, knuckles white.
I'm not. My boyfriend and I, we have sex, she whispers. But I don't think I can get pregnant.
She sees a twitch of an expression on the nurse's face, but it's there and gone in an instant.
Why do you think that is?
Chrissy flushes. After a long beat of silence, the nurse shifts.
When was your last cycle? She asks. Your menstrual cycle, that is.
Chrissy ducks her head again.
2 years ago,
she says. It's more of a question than she means it to be. The nurse goes still, blinks, sets her clipboard aside.
I'm sorry, she says, sitting down in the room's lone chair. Did I understand you correctly? It's been 2 years?
Chrissy nods. The nurse doesn't touch her, but the twitch of her hand makes Chrissy think she wants to.
And you're 18, correct?
Chrissy nods again.
But you haven't presented yet?
Chrissy shakes her head.
You're going to be an Omega,
her mother had said on the drive to Indianapolis.
The designation will suit you, and the heats won't be so hard to bear. Let Jason guide you through it when the time comes, and you may even enjoy it.
The nurse inhales, exhales. Chrissy, when she risks looking up at her, sees something determined come into her face.
Miss Cunningham, she says, her voice velvet over steel. I'm going to bring in my supervisor, if that's okay with you. I'll have a few more questions for you after she's done speaking with you. But you understand you've done nothing wrong, don't you?
Chrissy frowns, trying to ignore the rising panic in her stomach.
Isn't there something wrong with me? Because I haven't presented? I turned 18 4 months ago, I thought.
She trails off and focuses on her cuticles again. The nurse's next inhale is a shaky, angry thing. Chrissy shrinks back on instinct and only just sees the nurse's expression. There is horror there.
I'm sorry,
Chrissy says, immediately coming to her feet.
I shouldn't have. I'll go get my mother. She can explain.
No, the nurse says, firm as can be.
Chrissy stills and lets the nurse come into her space, cautious as this stranger puts gentle hands on her shoulders.
No, the nurse says again.
No, Chrissy, I'm glad that you told me. Please stay here. I promise that if we need to tell your mother about all this, I'll be the one to go get her.
Chrissy struggles to breathe past the lump in her throat. After a long beat, she nods. With one last worried look, the nurse retreats from the room. The world of uterine health is only just blooming in 1985, particularly in a state like Indiana. But what the nurse knows, and what patients are coming to know, is that without proper nutrients, there is no menstrual cycle. In a world where alphas, betas, and omegas have had a hand in shaping private society, that same lack of nutrients can delay a pup's presentation by months, if not years. There's a knock on the door before Chrissy expects there to be, and another kind woman on the other side. She smells like amber and iron, comforting in her own right.
Chrissy, she asks, closing the door behind her. I'm Dr. Kennedy. My nurse tells me that you're missing your period and your designation.
Chrissy nods. Dr. Kennedy takes a deep breath.
Okay, she says. Let's dive into that. You're under no obligation to tell me anything, of course, but we may have to complete a few tests just to make sure you're in good health. Based on what you've told my nurse, though, there may be some genuine reasons for concern.
Chrissy swallows hard. She remembers getting her first period, 11 years old, and unable to explain the redness blooming in her underwear. Her mother had been so proud, called her a woman, and went to the store with her to buy her first package of pads.
But no tampons, honey. Those aren't for girls like you.
She remembers losing her period, too, losing it not long after her mother caught her in the bathroom purging the Sunday dinner they'd shared with the Carters. Her clothes had felt too tight, her skin had stung, and the taste of vomit had lingered long on her tongue. She'd expected her period a week later, but it hadn't come, and it hadn't come, and hadn't come. She stole a pregnancy test from the nurse's office, claiming a headache and banking on her good reputation to keep the nurse from asking questions. When it came back negative, she'd sat on the turned-up toilet seat and stared at the stick with the crushing, horrible sensation that, once again, something was wrong with her.
"What do you mean?"
says Chrissy in the present, her voice terribly small. Dr. Kennedy sees the way she curls her hands together, though, and Chrissy feels the dam start to break.
"It's okay, Chrissy," she says.
When she reaches out and presses her hand against Chrissy, Chrissy flinches. The doctor shudders her expression of deep concern, but not before Chrissy can see it. And with that, the last puzzle piece finally slots into place. Out in the waiting room, Laura Cunningham flips through People magazine and rests easy in the belief that her daughter is the picture of health. Inside the examination room, Chrissy Cunningham, with the help of a knowledgeable doctor and a police officer snuck in the back, slowly takes back control of her life. November 1984. Chrissy had heard once about the presentations that PACS used to host for their young. It's an older tradition and certainly not one practiced in Indiana, at least not anymore. But in the cities on the coast, a pup's 18th birthday beget a party the likes of which no one had ever seen. More often than not, these parties took place a good week after the pup's actual birthday, better ensuring that their designation had set in without any surprises. She'd read about these comings out, though never in books that her mother lets her keep around the house. Chrissy knows, rather, the section of the library where the school keeps its romances, and while she also knows that the presentations described there can't be accurate, there's nothing more thrilling than reading about them during study hall. Not that she can take the books out of the library, mind. Not with the librarian reporting back to her mother come Sunday, or without another student spreading rumors about Chrissy's less-than-wholesome tastes. So she tucks the romances between textbooks and reads them protected by rows of books, and the status quo in Hawkins High remains undisturbed. But maybe she dreams a little as she comes up on her 18th. Maybe Chrissy wakes up a few days before the clock turns over and imagines what life could be like. She sits in her bed and dreams of the smell of waffles wafting up from the kitchen below, of a smile on her mother's face,
She imagines walking beside her little brother as they go to the mall for the day, then out to dinner before coming home to family, friends, and cake. Her stomach growls at the thought. All at once, Chrissy tucks her chin against her knees, awash with a sudden rush of guilt. There will be no waffles, no dinner, no cake on her birthday. There haven't been for the past few years. If she's lucky, there will be congratulations at church the next morning, and a party she can slip out to after her mother goes to sleep. She already knows what Laura Cunningham's gotten her, though. A prom dress, all pretty and tulle for the big dance coming in the spring. Chrissy knows this because she can hear her mother's sewing machine in the wee hours of the night, drawing in the sides to better hem in the edges of her daughter's life. Chrissy lets her head drop back on her pillow and does her best not to sigh. She closes her eyes and reminds herself where she is. Thursday, 2 days before her 18th birthday, and for the moment, undesignated. When she finally forces herself out of bed, it's easier to paste a smile under her face. February 1985. Moving her things out of her mother's house is... She doesn't have to do it alone, at least. Her father, divorced and clearly unnerved to be back on her mother's property, has called in some of his brothers to give her a hand. A paternal aunt is currently occupying Chrissy's younger brother, who thus far today has remained blissfully distracted from the manic absurdity of all of this. As for Chrissy's mother... Chrissy stands in the bedroom that she and her mother painted pastel pink not 4 years ago and wonders if she shouldn't be crying. It feels like she should be crying. Her eyes, though, remain persistently dry. Laura Cunningham has been arrested on 2 counts of child abuse, possession of illegal suppressants, and violation of several designative laws. The state of Indiana is acting on Chrissy and her brother's behalf in criminal court. While they might be called on to testify during her later trial, the date for that first confrontation is several months away. While it's likely that, with the help of her own parents, Laura Cunningham might make bail, Chrissy's state-assigned attorney has already helped both her and her brother apply for ex parte protective orders. Upon their approval by a judge, these orders will prevent their mother from coming into contact with them while their case is in progress. Explaining the process to AJ had been a struggle. But when Chrissy had met with him after her doctor's appointment, she'd seen something akin to understanding in his eyes, and her guilt at missing what trials her mother may have put him through is up there with the guilt of getting her mother arrested in the first place, no matter how justified that arrest may be. Now she listens to her Aunt Sarah talk to her brother about his lifelong interest in Legos while she does her best not to dissociate in her old bedroom. If she closes her eyes and listens hard enough, she swears she can hear the sound of her mother's sewing machine, still as it is, just a few rooms away. A hand comes down on her shoulder. Chrissy flinches and whimpers, but her Uncle Bart only looks at her with sympathetic understanding. He takes his hand off of her at once, for which Chrissy feels unspeakably grateful. "Come on, Shrimpo," he says, moving a little further into her room. "Tell me what I'm hauling down to the car. You want those dance trophies?"
"Oh, no, those can stay," Chrissy says, clearing her throat and fixing her face. "Here, I have some luggage in my closet that we can use."
It takes 3 days to finish clearing out the last of the children's things from the Cunningham house. By the time they're finished, they're halfway into the school week, but neither Chrissy nor her brother have attended a single day of class. With their things finally delivered to their father's house and with their uncles and aunt going back to their lives, though, the silence and abnormality and echoing strangeness of the whole endeavor becomes almost impossible to ignore. Chrissy's father looks at both of them, clears his throat, and recommends that they turn on the television while he makes lunch. Chrissy finds an episode of Chuck Norris' Karate Commandos for her brother and curls up on the couch, careful to keep her feet off of its cover. When her father brings bologna rolls on paper plates to the both of them, he frowns, just briefly, and comes to sit next to her.
"Don't worry about this old thing," he says, poking at his own plate. "Just make yourself comfortable. You're safe here."
Chrissy smiles, a watery thing, and feels the first of the ordeal's tears start to gather in the corners of her eyes. She keeps them quiet, both for her sake and her brother's, but it's impossible to hide them from her father. He watches her with wide eyes as she cries over her baloney, then pulls her into a tentative hug. She soaks his shirt as she muffles her cries into his shoulder. The baloney goes uneaten until her brother notices it. Chrissy lifts her head in time to watch him dip the abomination in ketchup and almost chokes on the combination of her laughter and tears. They get used to one another again over the course of the next several days. It is a loose and half-baked system they have in place, but considering that Chrissy wakes up on Monday feeling like a person and not a broken doll, it seems like a step in the right direction. She hears the turn of her father's tires in the driveway as he heads off to work. Only once the sound of his engine disappears down the road does she crawl out of bed. She moves into the kitchen on silent feet and stands somewhat listlessly in front of the refrigerator. The bright light is the only source of guidance in the otherwise dark house. They went shopping over the weekend at least. Now the mustard and beer in his refrigerator has been replaced with more food than Chrissy knows what to do with. She can feel bile rising in her stomach, but valiantly fights it back. Her little brother is snoring down the hall. He has to be at school by 7:10, so Chrissy squares her shoulders, takes a breath, reaches for the eggs. "Chrissy?" her brother grunts as she nudges his door open. Chrissy smiles, a fragile thing, and sets his breakfast down on his nightstand. AJ blinks at it, then at her, before breaking into a smile. He nibbles at it as she nurses a glass of orange juice, only digging in when he realizes it's palatable. Once Chrissy's satisfied that he's awake and functioning, she disappears back into the kitchen to pack his lunch. He brings his plate out to join her and licks the yolk from the porcelain before she shoos him into the bathroom. The hum of the refrigerator at her back is a little less intimidating with his dishes to clean. Even so, the glass of orange juice is all she can stomach. She does manage to pack herself half a sandwich, though, before the clock on the wall bids her to go. She hovers by the landline for a long moment, debating whether to call the cheer squad or, well, Jason, she supposes, for a ride to school. In the end, though, she and AJ walk to Hawkins Middle, hand in hand. Alone. AJ is more than happy to chase February's fat snowflakes down the road. Chrissy, despite having borrowed one of her father's coats, shivers behind him. "Remember," she tells him as the school comes into view. "What are you doing after school?"
"I'm staying in the office," AJ repeats.
He rolls his eyes and leans down to scoop a pack of snow together. Up ahead, Chrissy can see some of his friends gathering on the nearby steps. She knows that, despite everything, his teenage instincts rebel against her presence. It's enough to make her smile, though she hides it well. Instead, she glares at him and his newly packed snowball until he drops it with a snort.
"I can walk to the high school and wait until you're out of cheer, you know," he complains.
"You'll be able to get in if you want to," Chrissy says after a beat. Having AJ nearby is much more appealing than having to trek to the middle school after practice. "Don't come if it's snowing, though. I'll come and get you so we can walk home together."
AJ crosses his arms over his chest, but when Chrissy waits, he nods. She doesn't kiss him on the forehead or ruffle his hair. Instead, she squeezes his shoulders, then watches as he runs off, backpack swinging behind him as he guns it for the front steps. She waits until he disappears inside the middle school. Then, straightening her spine, Chrissy turns and walks for Hawkins High. It is by some miracle that the middle school starts classes earlier than the high school does. Chrissy arrives in time for the back half of morning cheer practice. Her coach ignores her as she walks in, dressed in her usual gear and ribbons, but the looks she gets from her teammates vary from startled to pitying to pissed. She doesn't know what rumors have circulated about her family over the past week. She doesn't want to know. If she wants to have any shot of making cheer captain in her senior year, though, she needs to grin and bear what's to come as best she can. So she does. The rest of Chrissy's junior year at Hawkins High looks like this. She walks her little brother to school every day, save on the rare occasions when their father is off from work. She learns to cook meals AJ enjoys and eventually starts to pre-pack his lunch, even sometimes branching out to make her own. She begins to see a nutritionist, who also recommends seeing a therapist to discuss her increasingly complicated relationship with food.
Chrissy compromises by scheduling an appointment with the school counselor, Ms. Kelly. It's a start. Cheer practice isn't so much a bastion as it is a comforting obligation. Chrissy determines in April that no matter how fast she runs, how far she flies, and how light she stays, because it's still a struggle to eat more than one meal a day, her daily obligations to her brother will make it impossible for her to become cheer captain. She unofficially cedes the fight to Madison Garner, who keeps looking at her sidelong as the year progresses, with something that looks increasingly like panic. On a whim, Chrissy invites her back to her father's house one day after school, at which point they discuss choreography for the next year's games and the expectation of a captain. Madison leaves with a smile on her face and a weight lifted off her shoulders. The next day, Chrissy and her brother both have a ride to school. It's comforting for all of the strangeness that comes with it. Chrissy knows that her father puts in the effort. He fields phone calls with the state's prosecutor, files for a modification of custody, and meets with them every night for family dinner. He's still relearning what it's like to have children, though, and she can't blame him for that. He does his best, particularly on the day when Jason Carver knocks on his door and breaks up with his daughter on his front stoop. Chrissy, who had watched the Carvers withdraw from her life with a kind of systematic efficiency, still weeps as his car drives away, as his friends on the basketball team stop making eye contact with her in the halls. Her father offers to go after him with a shovel. AJ offers to egg his house. In the end, they do neither, but her father brings home flowers the next day and watches 16 candles with her over takeout from KFC. He doesn't say a word when Chrissy only manages to eat a leg of chicken. Instead, he rubs her back as she leans against his leg. She's not alone at school, either. Madison shit-talks the basketball team on their drive to school for the next 10 days. Chrissy finds a bundle of hand-picked flowers waiting for her on the last Monday the cheer team spends at school. There's a note signed by at least half the team, many of whom look at her with small smiles on their faces, as she holds the flowers close to her heart. Chrissy buries her happy tears in the petals and tucks one of the many daisies behind her ear. It stays there for the rest of the day. By the time the academic year lets out, she is not better, precisely, than she was in the fall. Chrissy squeezes Madison's hand, though, as she drops the Cunninghams off on the curb and promises to call to schedule a mall date before the week is out. AJ, for all his sullen teenagerness, waves as she goes, and Chrissy resists the urge to tease him as they make their way back toward the house they now call home. July invites an even bigger change into their lives. Chrissy wakes one morning, sore all over and full of spitfire. She still makes her brother breakfast, still smiles at her father when he comes home from work. But she's grumpy and tearing up at animal shelter commercials like she's never done before. When a letter arrives from her mother, she rips it to shreds and flushes the remains down the toilet without so much as a thought. A few moments later, she's crying again and just barely resisting the urge to plunge her hand into the toilet to chase after her mother's words.
"What's up with you?" AJ asks over dinner.
Chrissy scowls at him and picks at her plate while her father beats a strategic retreat. 2 days later, she goes to the bathroom and sees blood for the first time in 2 years. The return of her period is a relief, even though it is an inconvenience. In a panic, Chrissy calls Jessica from the cheer team and begs her to bring her some supplies. Jessica arrives not only with several boxes of pads and tampons, but half the cheer team, many of whom boast chocolate and illicit wine. AJ packs off to a friend's house with a furious blush as the team sprawls in Chrissy's living room, all of them sharing advice and complaining about the stress of their first periods. And Chrissy could correct them, because technically she's done this before. There's a comfort, though, in this shared community that she lets wash over her instead. When her father comes home to find his house appropriated by young women, he clears his throat, orders pizza, and locks himself in his pseudo-library to avoid the noise. Later, when the team clears out, he asks Chrissy to warn him before she has sleepovers, but seems otherwise unfazed by the intrusion. Chrissy hugs him long and hard, and, later, can't decide whether the rush of emotion can be attributed to her relief or the hormones from her period. She also, over the course of the next several days, in between cramps that are one part painful and one part a relief, makes her way out to the public library. There, out of the sight line of the watchful librarian, one of her mother's old church friends, Chrissy thinks, she reads everything she can about the coming of her designation. Because it's coming, she can feel it burning in her neck where her glands rest, or where the nurses in Indianapolis said they were. It feels like an itch, like something watching over her shoulder. It's as unnerving as it is exciting. It feels like control. Dad? She asks later that night, when AJ and the friends he's hanging out with are blissfully occupied. I can't smell you. The nurses said I should be able to smell better once I present, but what designation are you? Mr. Cunningham blinks and sets his book, The Fantastic Light, aside. Chrissy watches the tips of his ears turn red and resists the urge to flee the table out of embarrassment.
I'm an alpha, he says, coughing into his fist like it's something embarrassing. Your mother is an omega, in case she never told you, but she, stopped experiencing heat sometime after your brother was born, so I, stopped thinking about it.
Chrissy furrows her brow and leans forward. You don't go into red? If possible, Mr. Cunningham coughs louder. His blush has spread from his ears to his nose, but in her defense, Chrissy isn't doing much better.
I do, but they ease up over time, he says, shrugging his shoulder.
He makes eye contact with her for a second, maybe less, then smiles ruefully at the floor.
When I was your age, it was a mess. During my first rut, I could smell everyone. I thought I was going to have to tape my nose shut just to make it through high school, let alone college. Fortunately, the smells aren't as strong on the average day as they are during a rut, and the ruts only hit about 3 times a year.
He takes off his glasses and fiddles with them, all while his foot scratches the linoleum of the floor. When he glances at her again, there's something distinctly awkward in his expression, but it's determined, too. And Chrissy had resented him endlessly when he'd divorced her mother. Whatever coldness lived inside Laura Cunningham had only grown colder in his absence. Now, though, well, it's not as though she doesn't understand.
So you don't have any idea what you might be?
He asks, his voice squeaking at the end of the sentence. Chrissy feels her cheeks burning and shakes her head. After a long beat, though, her father sniffs. Then he reaches out his hand. Chrissy takes it on instinct and feels an almost overwhelming wave of comfort wash over her. It's nearly enough to drive her to tears.
No matter what, her father says, still not able to make eye contact, but as solid as a stone foundation. We'll work together to handle it. Your designation is only part of who you are, darling, and it has no impact on your Eunice.
Tears well up in Chrissy's eyes. She sobs. Her father blanches, then opens up his arms as she throws herself into them. It's awkward, for sure, when he pats her on the back, but Chrissy hangs on to him and doesn't think about her mother sitting in jail, or at the edge of their territory, or wherever she is in the world. She thinks, for the first time, about the good that might wait for her in the future. August 1985. School starts again in the fall, as it is wont to do. AJ begins his freshman year at Hawkins High, making Chrissy's morning commutes easier to manage. The first day back, though, is avoiding the sideways looks of basketball players in the hall, trying not to bulk as AJ ignores her friendly wave in favor of his friends in the lunchroom. The stretch of her muscles after morning cheer practice, partnered with her discomfort with the way her body has changed over the summer. Chrissy is heavier than she used to be. She knows she is, even though when she looks in the mirror, she can still count some of her ribs. She feels like a stranger in her own body, though, and it leaves her unsure of how to hold herself. Even so, she smiles through the cheer-hosted pep rally at the end of the day, waving her pom-poms and cheering as Principal Coleman welcomes the rest of the student body back. When she and AJ arrive home after school, though, there is a letter from the state on the table. Her father is in the middle of cooking dinner, rice and broccoli casserole if the smell's anything to go by, but he grimaces as Chrissy takes it in hand.
It's addressed to you, he tells her, leaning his hip against the oven. Bud, I thought we could open it together.
Chrissy swallows. She breathes. Okay. They sit down at the kitchen table together and squint at the letter's fine print. The point of the letter is buried beneath a frankly unreasonable amount of legal jargon. Chrissy has to read it twice before she understands the point. The state, it seems, is prepared to initiate discovery in its criminal case against her mother. A representative will be coming to Hawkins in a month to discuss everything. The state's Department of Child Services has included a note of their own inviting AJ to pursue a Chin's case, should he so wish. Chrissy closes her eyes. She breathes in through her nose and out through her mouth, like Miss Kelly recommended. It's barely enough to keep her heart rate from skyrocketing, but it does help. "Darling?" her father asks. Chrissy, when she opens her eyes, trades him the letter for his wooden spoon. The smell of the broccoli and butter on the stove is enough to make her gag. She swallows it back as her father reads the letter once, then again. And it's a good thing, technically. She's under no obligation to interact with her mother throughout the discovery process, the letter says as much. But the thought of rehashing everything from the past 3 or 4 years. Chrissy eats 3 florets and a spoonful of rice with dinner. Her father, distracted as he is, doesn't comment. AJ looks between the two of them and ferrets the truth out in pieces, at which point he inhales his food and disappears off into his bedroom. Both Chrissy and her father wince as the door slams shut. The next day, Chrissy waves Madison off and walks with her brother to school. They don't say anything. The one time she tries to talk about his classes, he only grunts. But the quiet company is enough. The anxiety that brews in her gut, though, and the nightmares that come in the weeks to follow, do not help. 1 week out from the meeting, Chrissy walks into her morning chemistry class with dark circles under her eyes and quivering fingers. She snaps a pencil in the middle of the lesson and raises her hand almost at once, desperate to make it to the bathroom before she explodes. And that's how she finds herself bent in half over a Hawkins High toilet seat, trying desperately not to think about what's on this bathroom floor as she gags up what little she was able to eat for breakfast. She squeezes her eyes shut all the while, desperately ignoring the voice in the back of her head that tells her she's a failure, that she hasn't grown at all, that she'll always be here, down on her knees and barely functioning, no matter what her life looks like. The bathroom door opens. Chrissy wheezes and reaches for the toilet paper on instinct, desperate to wipe the snot out from underneath her nose. She doesn't recognize the shoes that hesitate a stall away from hers, but she tries to quiet herself all the same. It doesn't work. After a long beat, the stranger knocks on the door of her stall. A voice, rough but not unkind, whispers, "Are you okay?" Chrissy inhales and... Ah. The girl's restroom doesn't smell particularly pleasant on a good day, but this girl has brought a scent with her. She's young, too young to have a designation, but Chrissy can smell the worry on her like it's a particularly strong perfume. And she wants to laugh. Chrissy wants to scream into this toilet and this bathroom and this whole damn school. But she can't. So she clears her throat instead and manages a weak, "I'm fine." That wouldn't even convince herself, let alone her visitor. The visitor, in fact, scoffs. The worry in her smell deepens with something like distrust, which only makes Chrissy feel worse. "Come on out," she says, taking a step back from the stall. "I have some Gatorade in my backpack. I wasn't going to drink it anyway, and you're going to need to clean out your mouth." "It's okay, really," Chrissy tries to say. She hears the sound of a backpack pressing up against the wall, though, as the stranger leans back and waits for her to get up off her knees. Despite the shame coursing through her, Chrissy does just that. She flushes the evidence of her fear down the toilet and steps out into the bathroom to find a red-headed freshman looking at her with, not pity, but curiosity. Chrissy looks at her instead of at her own reflection in the mirror and tries for something like a smile. She's not sure how well it works. The girl's shoulders tighten instead of relaxing, even as she swings her backpack off of her back and digs around for the promised Gatorade. As Chrissy screws off the cap and takes a sip, she sees that curiosity break. "You're Cunningham, right?" the girl asks her shoes. Chrissy swallows her sip of Gatorade and braces herself with a small smile.
"Yeah, I am. What's your name?"
The girl's shoes become all the more interesting.
"Max."
When she looks up, Max's eyes are full of steel.
"You probably knew my half-brother."
"Your half-brother?"
"Billy."
Chrissy stills. She knew Billy Hargrove in passing, if only because Jason did. She knows what stories leaked after his death, though. Knows what the PTA moms say about Max Mayfield's mother.
Not well, she says after a beat too long. She moves to pass the Gatorade back, but Max waves her away. Instead, she crosses her arms over her chest.
The rumor mill here is a bitch, she says, wrinkling her nose. After a second, though, Chrissy sees her almost smirk. But if you want to form a club for kids with unnecessary trauma, we'd make less than shitty founders.
Chrissy can't help it. She snorts. It's not a pleasant sensation post-vomit, but the laughter of it sticks in her throat.
Max smiles a crooked smile at her that disappears almost as soon as it appears. Chrissy, in turn, covers her mouth with her hand.
A club might make it all easier to deal with, Chrissy admits.
Max's expression isn't quite sympathetic, but Chrissy can't deny the camaraderie that's taken root in this shithole bathroom. After a long beat of shared silence, Max sighs and shifts on her feet.
Look, she says, I'm not a talker. I'm not going to make you talk about it. But if you're looking for something to take the edge off, I know a guy.
Chrissy tilts her head, confused. Max pushes forward anyway.
Eddie Munson's got some stuff,
she says, kicking at the dirty floor.
I've heard it helps.
Chrissy hums.
Eddie, he's the one who puts on shows in the cafeteria every week.
Max rolls her eyes, but it's a fond sort of thing. If she were another type of girl, Chrissy might make a note of it. Instead, she offers up an answering, albeit watery, giggle.
You can slip a note in his locker if you want to, Max says with a shrug. I hear he deals out back in the woods. Not that I've been there myself.
She glances at Chrissy again and wrinkles her nose, but it's a playful sort of thing.
You might want to chew some gum before you go see him.
Chrissy flushes and ducks her head. She takes the hand that was originally in front of her mouth and coughs into it, and yeah. Turns out her eggs don't smell all that good coming back up. Max goes digging into her pockets and hands her a stick of gum. It's in Chrissy's instincts to turn it down, but Max's look is so severe that she sticks it into her mouth without question. They stare at one another for a long second before Max coughs and Chrissy remembers where they are.
Thank you,
she manages, offering Max a genuine smile as the girl pushes off the wall. Max waves her away as she steps into one of the stalls, leaving Chrissy to stare between her and the mirror in front of her. After a beat, she makes eye contact with her reflection. She does her best to fix her hair. When she leaves, she's a shadow of the girl who walked the halls a year ago. But she's getting better. It's not until she's nearly back in chemistry that she realizes she still has Max's Gatorade in hand. She drinks it slowly over the course of the next three periods, then throws the bottle into the recycling at lunch. In the moments she can spare, and given her distraction, that's more than a few. She gives some thought to Max's friend, Eddie Munson. Chrissy knows his face in passing, used to have to smother her laughter when his voice carried through the lunchroom. She knows, too, what the rumor mill has to say about him, a boy living in a trailer park on his third senior year, making a living dealing weed to the same athletes and brainiacs he disparages in front of the lunchtime crowd. If she's interacted with him directly, she can't remember it, but he seems tricky to pin down, to say the least of it. Considering her own position in Hawken High's social hierarchy, though, Chrissy imagines she doesn't have room to talk. She does, however, have time to think. She knows some of the cheer squad likes to use marijuana to relax, that Madeline Fletcher paid $100 for the Adderall that got her a 790 on the math section of the SATs last year. Chrissy knows, too, that even in the face of Max's kindness, her skin feels too tight, and the state's letter looms large in the back of her head. It takes her a day of mulling things over, along with another restless night, to cave. It doesn't take much effort to find Eddie Munson's locker. It doesn't take much effort to write the note, either. At this point in her life, the only person Chrissy is worried about seeing her slip a pink piece of notebook paper into Eddie's locker, helpfully detailed with a black Sharpie, freak, and what looks like familiar handwriting, is her little brother. Fortunately, AJ isn't in the hall when Chrissy goes up on her toes, so she walks away from the scene of the crime with only a little bit of guilt nestled in the cockles of her heart. When she walks out of school, 3 hours later, she sneaks toward the wood behind the football stadium. She has half an hour or so before cheer practice starts. AJ, too, is meeting with friends before the start of a club that he's tried to explain before, but that she doesn't really get. She may not have gotten a note back after her clandestine delivery, but Chrissy is desperate and has time to kill. If it means relief, she can be patient. She finds the picnic table Max mentioned without too much effort, though it is well tucked away. There's a scent attached to it that she's never caught before, and it's easy enough, now that she's back in control of her body, to follow it. Chrissy scents the musk on the air and lets it guide her to the clearing, all while relishing the strange sense of comfort that comes with it. The table, when she arrives, is empty. A quick inspection reveals signs of regular use, and the scent filling the clearing is almost distressingly fresh. There are initials etched into the surface of the table that go back decades, and more recent markings, too. The doodled bats on the far side of the table are almost endearing. There are words underneath them, though, that Chrissy struggles to make out. She sits and leans in, squinting and trying to associate the poetry-like stanzas with the language that she might recognize. She's ruled out the romance languages by the time she hears a stick crack in the woods. All at once, she's upright and clutching her book bag to her chest. It only takes a moment for her shape to distinguish itself from the rest of the woods. Chrissy feels the tightness in her chest release as a wary Eddie Munson, wild hair, cut-off jean jacket, and Metallica shirt, picks his way out from between the trees. He stops at the edge of the clearing and hesitates, but grins at the sight of her. The expression is too bright for Chrissy not to smile back, but she keeps it small. As Eddie lifts his hands and tucks them behind his head, she offers him the tiniest of waves. The smell in the clearing rises. Chrissy breathes it in through an open mouth and rolls it across her tongue. She misses the way Eddie's expression falters as she does, distracted as she is by the strange notes she can taste. When she opens her eyes to look at him again, though, he's stepping forward. Ever, it seems, the showman. "Chrissy Cunningham," he says, one side of his smile rising higher than the other. "As I live and breathe."
"Eddie Munson," Chrissy answers.
Eddie's face lights up at that and, oh, Chrissy inhales again and feels as though she could live in this clearing for the rest of her life. It's the safest she's felt in months, years even.
"Would you look at that," he says, and the space between them, Chrissy realizes, is disappearing at a tremendous rate. By the time he stops, there are only a few feet between the two of them. "Not only am I graced by the presence of the Queen of Hawkins High, but she's sitting on my side of the table."
All at once, Chrissy flushes. Eddie's laugh fills the clearing as she scrambles to the other side of the table, leaving the poetry and its mystery language for another day. She sits down, prim as can be, on the other side, and looks at him with more confidence than she actually has. There's a small element of sheepishness in her expression, too, but she only looks at him from under her lashes for a second. Eddie raises an eyebrow and throws a leg up onto the bench she just vacated. It doesn't even take an effort for her to smell him as he does. It's concentrated and compelling, like the clearing but richer. Chrissy swallows and tries to focus on what he's saying.
"So," he drawls, eyeing the area around the two of them with a certain near resignation. "Is this where your basketball buddies jumped me for selling your boyfriend oregano a month ago?"
Chrissy coughs back a laugh and just barely manages to catch it.
"You sold Jason oregano?"
she asks, eyes wide and mouth smiling. After a beat, though, she registers the rest of the sentence.
"And, no. Your information's a little out of date."
She says it more quietly than she means to, some of her good humor stuttering and finding its way to the ground between the two of them. Chrissy looks at her hands as her troubles come rushing back to her and feels a trickle of doubt creep into her soul.
His family didn't really want to be connected to mine after everything that happened."
The scent in the clearing doesn't change, but the tone does shift. Chrissy feels Eddie sit down across from her more than she sees it. She, on the other hand, continues to study the back of her hands. And look, there's the scar she earned during her first roundoff. Isn't that interesting?
"Yeah, what an ass," Eddie says, interrupting her thoughts. Chrissy glances at him long enough to see him run a hand through his mane of curls.
Any guy'd be an idiot to try and break up with you, Cunningham, but that's exactly the kind of excuse I'd expect Ken and his fucking dollhouse family to give while doing it. But hey,
and here his tone changes, happy enough that Chrissy finds herself all but compelled to look him in the face.
I'll be the first, if no one's done it already, to welcome you to the club of freaks and geeks. We meet on Sundays for milkshakes at Freddy's. Hope that won't interfere with your...
As he trails off, he mimics the rise and fall of her pom-poms. And despite it all, Chrissy finds herself giggling again.
You're not the first, actually, she says. Max Mayfield beat you by a few days.
Fuck, Eddie says, grinning. Fine, good kid. I'll take the loss. I can't imagine she's the one who sent you my way, though. She fucking hates me.
She did, actually, Chrissy teases, a small smile playing out on her face. I hope you're paying her commission.
Gonna fucking have to if she got your attention,
Eddie agrees, though it's more something he says to himself than it is to her. Chrissy giggles and draws his attention back. It makes her skin spark, having his eyes on her like that. And this connection, if she wants to call it that, some strange thing drawing her to this table, to his scent, to his smile, it's fast. Something in her gut tells her to draw back, to stop giggling, Chrissy, for goodness sake. Something else, though, wants to take this moment and hold it close to her heart forever. He's looking at her like she's stuck a bottle rocket in his hand, confused but excited, too. After a long beat, he sits down across from her again, his eyes narrowing with curiosity.
You know, he says, almost casual, this isn't the first time we've, hung out.
Chrissy tilts her head, drawn into puppyish confusion.
It isn't?
Eddie grabs for his chest and slips backward. Chrissy leaps after him as he slips off of the picnic table bench, breathing a giddy sigh of relief only when he scrambles to his feet.
You wound me,
he laughs, pulling stray leaves out of his hair.
But nah, I can't say I'm surprised. I wouldn't remember me either.
When he looks at her again, it's with something almost nostalgic in his expression.
Middle school, he says, drawing his hands out like a showman. Talent show.
Chrissy thinks back as the memories start to come back to her, little pom-poms held tightly in her hands, her friends sticking their heads together and giggling.
You performed, didn't you?
She says. Eddie's face lights up as the name finally clicks in her head.
Corroded Coffin!
Well, shit, Eddie breathes.
Joy rolls off of him in delicious, malt-rich waves. Chrissy inhales through an open mouth.
You do remember.
It's been a while, Chrissy admits. Are you still playing?
Every Tuesday at the hideout. You should come sometime.
Eddie winks, but is then quick to hide his face behind his hair.
See if we've actually improved or not.
Chrissy laughs as he sits back down, hauling a black lunchbox out from underneath the table. She notices, as she's sure he does too, that she doesn't commit. But the more she thinks about it, well...
I'll think about it, she says with a kind smile.
Eddie shrugs, but his smile is still cuttingly bright. Chrissy lets the space between them settle in a moment of silence, content in a way she hasn't been in a long time. Then Eddie's pushing the lunchbox towards her, letting her get a glimpse of the inside.
So, Cunningham, he says,
his voice taking on that authoritative bent it always has in the school lunchroom.
Most people don't come out here just to reminisce about middle school with me. What is it the Max Mayfield wants me to sell you, hmm?
All at once, reality starts to creep into their little circle. Chrissy doesn't know what the realization does to the air exactly, but she sees Eddie flinch. Something instinctive in the back of her head responds poorly. All at once, she wants to reach out and rub circles into the back of his hand. She doesn't, but the urge sits heavy in her belly.
I'm not sure,
she admits, dropping her gaze back to the picnic table. Desperate for something to soothe the tingling in her hands, she traces a set of initials left behind by students long graduated.
I just want to get out of my own head.
When she looks at him again, her eyes are wide. She doesn't know what he sees precisely, but the tension in his shoulders dissolves all at once.
Do you ever feel like you're losing your mind?
He huffs a laugh. It's not a happy thing, but it's not unhappy either. Just every damn day,
he admits, rubbing the back of his neck. Chrissy's eyes are drawn to the motion all at once. If she squints, she can see something there, just above a tattoo of several small bats. Eddie's hair is quick to cover it, though, as he refocuses on his lunchbox.
Luckily for you, he says, motioning toward his products. I have a variety of products that will be your express ticket to Wonderland.
Chrissy follows his gaze and takes a quick moment to look over the contents of his mysterious lunchbox. There's a roll of money, sure, and a few pre-rolled joints. Then there's a few small bags of white powder and another few round pills tucked tidily in the corner. Eddie seems to follow her gaze as she looks. All at once, the smell in the air turns not quite sour, but not quite right either. Chrissy looks up, confused and concerned, giving Eddie enough time to snap the lunchbox shut.
Okay, he says, voice tilting high at the end. You find what you were looking for, or do you want to call this a day?
She wants to push. No, she wants to ask, because she doesn't think she saw the suppressants her mother stashed away, but she thinks she might know what they look like. The tension coming off of Eddie in waves is more than enough to stop Chrissy's tongue in her mouth, though. She sits back and tugs at the end of her ponytail, biting her lip as she does. She misses the way Eddie's eyes fall to the motion as she does it, misses his sharp inhale and the immediate regret on his face. I've never tried marijuana before, she says, looking him in the eye again. But that's probably a good place to start. She listens as he breathes out, long and slow.
Marijuana, he drawls, like he hasn't said the word in a long time. It's as good as any for a newbie.
How much, then? Eddie blinks at her. Chrissy watches as his fingers stutter over his lunchbox.
Tell you what, he says after a long beat. Beginner's discount. 20 for half an ounce. And for the lesson...
His voice trails off, but his smile rises to replace it.
Just the pleasure of your company.
It feels magnanimous for some reason, and it leaves Chrissy smiling. She digs through her book bag for the money she'd saved on lunches and passes it over. Eddie takes it with a bow and produces two pre-rolled joints. After he snaps the lunchbox shut, he draws a lighter from one of his many pockets and flicks the flame. Chrissy delicately holds her joint between two fingers, staring between him and it with no little confusion. Only a blind man would miss the way that Eddie's expression softens. He sticks his own unlit joint between his teeth, then cautiously reaches out to touch her hand. Chrissy inhales at the contact and smells him in a way that is the same and yet different than scenting the whole clearing. He is the woods and smoke, unexpected, like a razor blade stuck in a candy bar. Her mouth opens as that urge comes back. The urge to back him against a tree, stick her nose against his neck, and live there for as long as she can. Something deep inside of her rumbles. Eddie, to his credit, doesn't seem to notice, or is so distracted by some revelation of his own that Chrissy's able to hide her own expression before he sees. She looks away from his hand in time to see him swallow hard. His eyes are dark and his mouth is half open in something like shock. His joint falls to the ground. Oh, Chrissy murmurs, leaning forward. Eddie backs up, giving her space as she leans over. She fishes his joint out of the grass as he lights the one between his fingers, then looks up and makes eye contact. Without a second thought, he sticks the lit joint between his lips. His eyes are nearly pitch black for their darkness. Chrissy feels her mouth go dry. She stutters, doing her best to focus on the joint between his plush, red, bitten lips. I thought that was mine.
Was it?
It takes Eddie a second to come back to himself after a beat, his cheeks flushed.
Ah, fuck. Here, I can get you a new one.
Chrissy slips his abandoned joint between her lips before he can take a step in her direction. The taste of him lingers on it. Even without the light, she feels herself shiver in satisfaction. If possible, Eddie's pupils blow wider.
Damn, he murmurs, taking a puff.
He holds out the lighter, and at Chrissy's nod of approval, moves into her space. She looks up at him with bright eyes, taking in the way his scent rolls off of him and his hands shake.
"Chrissy Cunningham," he says, finally lighting her joint. "You are a freak."
Chrissy does her best to make the most of the light, tries to inhale like she's seen old Hollywood stars do it in the movies. She coughs instead. It shakes the moment, lets it slide in a different direction. Eddie's face lights up with laughter.
"There it is," he says, careful to keep hold of his own joint. "Don't worry, babe, it happens to everyone. Here, let me show you how it's done."
He does his best to educate her in the art of smoking a joint before she has to run off to cheer practice. Chrissy leaves the clearing smelling like him and weed. She feels his gaze on the back of her neck as she walks away from the clearing, and it leaves her giddy. She's sparking with energy by the time she makes it to the girls' locker room, even if she has to douse herself with perfume to cover the scent lingering from the woods. Stepping into the school parking lot is unusual. It leaves her lightheaded in a way she didn't expect. Instinct tells her to turn around, to go back to the clearing and add her own scent to the picnic table and trees. She's able to ignore it well enough, though, telling herself that she can just slip another note in his locker if she wants to go back again. By the time she arrives home, the combination of the weed and the exercise has left her muscles lax. She manages to eat half a serving of the casserole she and her dad made over the weekend before excusing herself to bed. There she lays on her back, stares at her ceiling, and breathes deep. The world is sharper than it used to be, somehow. Her anxiety, too, seems temporarily buried beneath a weighted blanket. Chrissy studies the texture of the plaster above her head and drags her hand over her comforter, relishing in the decorative fabric pearls that punctuate every few inches of fabric. If she closes her eyes, she can catch snatches of the scent she brought home with her from the woods. She does it without thinking, inhaling deep and fisting her fingers into her comforter. The low heat building in her belly from earlier seems to grow, seems to encompass every thought until she's breathing through her mouth and squirming on top of her bed. And Chrissy, it's not as though Chrissy hasn't masturbated before. She and Jason had fooled around in his back seat enough that she'd had to learn how. After he'd presented, he'd nuzzled at the places where her mating gland was supposed to be, and whispered sweet promises of how he'd take care of her once she came into her own designation. Now, though, now the urge to slide a hand down to her clit is all but irresistible. Chrissy opens her eyes only to make sure that the door to her bedroom is locked. Then, biting her lip, she presses into her hand. It's too easy to imagine herself back in that clearing. She breathes and catches the trace of that scent. Musk, malt, laughter. Chrissy imagines chasing it through the woods, following it until she spots a familiar head of curly hair. For a moment, her hand stops, but the more she thinks about it, the more the pieces seem to come together. Of course it's Eddie giving off that scent, making a nest out of his clearing, keeping the space for himself. Of course he smells like those woods, that smoke, that sharp biting joy. Chrissy bites back a groan and bucks into her hand. In her mind, he meets her at the picnic table, whimpering as she sucks his bottom lip and soothes it with sweet kisses. His hair is so long that it's not hard to imagine tangling her hands into it. She could pull it, slide her legs over his thighs as they tumble down into the earth, nose at his mating gland, and bury herself there. She can imagine the length of him beneath her and feels, for a blinding moment, the overwhelming urge to take and take and take. Chrissy gasps as she comes. She squeezes her thighs together and rides out the shocks, feels her whole body shudder in response to the thought of Eddie Munson beneath her in his clearing. Her mind is fuzzy enough, as she comes down, that she doesn't put too much thought into the whys or hows. Instead, she presses her nose against her pillow and bemoans the last dregs of that scent as it fades from her room. Across town, Eddie Munson hides behind his locked bedroom door and does his best to control the up and down of his hand on his cock as he shoves Chrissy Cunningham's $20 bill beneath his nose. September 1985. August gives way to September the next day. Chrissy wakes with a mouthful of cotton and a tightness to her skin that's Not uncomfortable, per se, but certainly noticeable. She spends longer than she cares to admit in the bathroom, poking at her cheeks and touching up her eyeshadow. She has enough time to make AJ breakfast, but she climbs into Madison's car hungrier than she has been since she moved out of her mother's home. There's no need to rush. No practice this morning, but a double in the afternoon. But Madison throws her a look anyway. Chrissy looks back and breathes in, and nearly chokes. Madison's car smells like an overdone Sunday roast. It's rich enough to make Chrissy's stomach roll. Without a thought, she growls. The scent doesn't diminish, but Madison's look grows all the sharper. For a long moment, the car is full of tension. Then, slowly, the scent starts to recede. Chrissy finishes buckling her seatbelt and glances back toward AJ. He's in the middle of reading a comic book and doesn't even spare her a glance. When Chrissy looks at Madison again, her expression is complicated. Even so, she doesn't say anything about the exchange until they reach the high school parking lot. Then she puts a hand on Chrissy's thigh before looking at AJ in the back seat. Chrissy doesn't know whether to bristle at the contact or not. Madison doesn't give her time to think about it.
AJ, she says, both firm and cheerful, why don't you head in? Your sister and I have to talk about girl things.
AJ grimaces almost at once and vacates the car faster than Chrissy would have thought possible. Chrissy waves at him as he makes a run for the front door, then looks at Madison with a quirked eyebrow. As soon as the car door slams shut, Madison whirls on her. There's a slightly manic look in her eye, Chrissy realizes, but she doesn't feel unsafe.
Girl, Madison hisses through her teeth. What the fuck? If you're going into rut, you need to say something.
Chrissy blinks. She feels too hot all of a sudden, like she wants to clamber out of the car and run a few laps before the first bell even rings.
What?
Madison's expression shifts. It's still not threatening, but it's no longer frustrated either. Instead, Chrissy feels a pang of shame as a skitter of devastation flashes over Madison's face.
Oh, fuck, she says. Your mom really didn't tell you anything, did she?
Chrissy crosses her arms over her chest, abruptly self-conscious.
I asked my dad, she says to the dashboard. My mom said I was going to be an Omega.
Madison laughs. It's not unkind, but the manic edge Chrissy spotted in her eyes leaks into her voice.
Girl, she says meaningfully, you're not an Omega, holy shit. Come on, we're skipping first period. We've got to talk.
Chrissy opens her mouth to protest, but the warmth in her is streaking up her back and making it almost uncomfortable to sit still. After a long beat, her shoulders slump.
Where are we going?
Madison smiles as she puts the car into drive again.
My parents are at work, she says. There's like half a pot of coffee and some donuts left over from breakfast. It's either my place then or Mike Steiner, but I don't think this is a conversation you want to have in public.
At that moment, Chrissy's stomach chooses to growl. She colors as Madison laughs, genuine kindness in her bell-like tones.
My place, Madison says, decisive.
She turns her car toward the road, then glances at Chrissy again.
First things first, though, we've got to roll down the windows. I'm an Alpha 2 girl, and your scent? Super not my thing.
Helpless, Chrissy laughs. It isn't quite manic, but it bubbles out of her all the same. She feels Madison smile at her as she cranks the driver's side window down, and some of her nervousness abates. They drive out of the Hawkins High parking lot at top speed, leaving the incoming school buses and waves of students in the dust. One student, though, rarely on time, but determined today to go in with his head on straight, turns as the car leaves the lot. He lifts his nose to the air. He stiffens as it disappears from sight, then turns on his heel. Eddie Munson doesn't make it to first period. He stomps toward a nest in the woods instead and tries to remind himself how to breathe. Chrissy, focused as she is on breathing air that doesn't smell like pot roast and alpha hormones, doesn't notice. There was a day, back in fifth grade, that Chrissy remembers well. The boys went out to play kickball while the girls were corralled into a dark classroom to discuss the changes coming to their lives. Her morning with Madison isn't like that. Shirley Temple's not doing the voiceover to start, but there's also more coffee. The confusion is the same, too, but also not. It's hard to explain. Needless to say, Chrissy sits at Madison's kitchen table, clutching a Ball State coffee mug and nibbling at a half-stale donut. Across from her, Madison rocks back on one of her parents' wooden chairs and explains what Chrissy's new world is going to look like. All the while, the kitchen reeks of pot roast. So, Madison says, dumping too much cream into her coffee.
The romance novels at the library don't get it all right. Your body's not going to change, or at least mine hasn't yet, so I don't think yours will. But you're going to rut like 3 times a year, and it's going to suck unless you can find an omega to spend it with.
Chrissy chokes on her coffee. Madison holds up a hand before she can speak.
Questions at the end, Cunningham, or we'll be here all day.
Chrissy forces back the urge to growl. She doesn't know how Madison can tell, exactly, but Madison smirks at her before she continues.
If you can't manage to spend your rut with an omega, I recommend toys. The guys I've been with for my ruts are fine with the usual in and out. Male omegas have little knots, but it's you who's going to keep them in place. Our cum's like mega sticky. My omegas say it makes for a great high, but it's a bitch to clean up. Make sure you're on birth control beforehand, she adds. Instincts tend to overrule a lot of your day-to-day practicalities, no matter how fucking prepared you are. There are some knotting toys out there on the market if you're dealing with an omega who wants to be filled up.
Madison pauses, then frowns.
They'd probably work with a female omega if you're into that sort of thing, but I couldn't tell you one way or the other.
Chrissy clutches the Ball State mug tighter and looks at the ceiling. A helpless giggle slips out of her. She swallows the rest of them as quickly as she can, but she can still see a crack of pity in Madison's otherwise practical expression.
This doesn't feel real,
she says, her voice cracking on the last word. Madison nods and reaches out to squeeze her hand.
It didn't when I presented either. Believe me, female omegas have it easier. But we are what we are, and it's best to try and live with that.
Chrissy waits, but Madison's explanation loses some of its steam. Hesitantly, she looks back down from the ceiling.
Why do you smell like pot roast?
Madison throws her head back and laughs. Chrissy stares for a long beat at the untouched mating gland on her neck.
The same reason you smell like you do,
Madison says, wiping a tear from her eye.
All that bullshit about how alphas can't be friends is just that, bullshit. But we still smell wrong during a rut. If you're heading into your first, you're going to find out real quick whose smell you can tolerate and whose you can't.
She grins, cocking her head to one side and letting her ringlets bounce in the mid-morning light.
If it's any consolation, you smell like gasoline to me. So long as you stay on top of your ruts, I think we can still be friends.
Something tense unwinds in Chrissy's chest. Her scent must reflect it, because some of Madison's hard humor softens. Chrissy squeezes the hand held between them and takes a sip of her coffee. They end up skipping more than first period, sorting out the details of her rut. Madison teaches her what she can about the nature of her mating gland, though it seems the romance novels weren't too far off on that front. Chrissy leaves the Garner household with a burgeoning new vocabulary and a catalog that Madison's kept hidden under her bed since she presented.
You have to call the company, Madison tells her. She passes it over. But the boxes they send their products in are discreet.
She stops them by the McDonald's drive-thru on the way back to school. Chrissy orders more chicken nuggets than she has in recent history and finds that, despite the nagging voice of her mother in the back of her head, the emptiness in her stomach compels her to eat all of them. She thinks she imagines the look of approval on Madison's face as they pull into the school parking lot, but she can't be certain. By the time they make it inside, lunch is letting out. Madison nudges her shoulder and runs off to her calculus class, leaving Chrissy to wander in the direction of her English classroom. She lingers by her locker for a long moment, though, and just breathes. It's not easier to contend with the sudden influx of scents, but it's getting easier to dissect them. With one breath, she can sense an alpha nearby, considering her with curious intent. With another, she knows that one of the nearby omegas is just coming out of her heat, and that her alpha is constantly on watch nearby. Jason passes her on her way to English and meets her gaze with a look of shock. Chrissy inhales and smells the alpha rolling off him, sharp like the bleach under her father's sink.
She wrinkles her nose on instinct and smells some horrible combination of shame and upset fill the air as he continues on his way. And she wants to cry just a little for that lost relationship, but in the wake of this change, well, maybe it's for the best that they broke up when they did. By the time she makes it to English, Chrissy's nose is full and her head is reeling. She focuses, though, when Mrs. O'Donnell walks in and the lesson begins. It's easier, listening to her droning voice, to ignore the growing itch sitting at the base of her spine.
So, Madison says on their drive home, you're like a week out from your rut, if I'm smelling you right.
Her voice is low, and AJ in the back seat is distracted. Even so, Chrissy tenses at the mention. After a second, she nods and begins to make a plan. Later that night, she sneaks out to the payphone at the end of the street. The woman who answers her call is sympathetic and practical. Chrissy ignores the guilt of using her father's credit card for a few essentials before hanging up and slipping her way back inside. The next evening, her father lifts his nose in the kitchen, scents, and turns beet red. Chrissy can't make eye contact with him as they make dinner together, but his presence is non-threatening. He claps her on the shoulder before they sit down and tells her that, no matter what she needs, he'll do his best to help her. That night, she finishes a full plate of steak and potatoes before she realizes what she's done. Old habits lead her into the bathroom a few hours later, but Chrissy can only sit on the edge of the bathtub and stare at the toilet. Her mother's voice wriggles in the back of her mind, but it's drowned out by the deep, instinctual thrum in her bones. She goes to bed with a full stomach that night. It feels strange, but not uncomfortable. In the wake of the abrupt shift in her day-to-day routine, Chrissy almost forgets her interview with the state prosecutor. Her father wakes her up on Monday, though, with a grim look on his face and a cup of coffee in his hands.
"I have called you out of school," he tells her as they walk to the kitchen together. "She wants to meet at the local courthouse by 10.
Chrissy goes stock still. At her wide eyes, her father stiffens, then seems to understand his mistake.
"The prosecutor, darling," he says, reaching out to gather her in his arms.
Chrissy lets out a broken noise and buries her face in his shirt, even as her shoulders sag with relief.
"Just the prosecutor," her father repeats, rubbing soothing circles onto her back.
They stand like that for a good while until AJ comes out of his bedroom and demands a feast for breakfast. Fortunately for all of them, AJ is a growing boy. Even with her coming rut pressed against her bones, it's impossible for Chrissy to eat any of the food her father puts in front of her. When they arrive, the Hawkins courthouse is more unassuming than Chrissy thought it would be. She looks up at it, looks at her father, and tries to steady her breathing. AJ stands on her father's other side and glares at the edifice, to better, Chrissy thinks, hide the way that his hands are shaking. Of all of them, it's their father who takes the deepest breath.
"Okay," he says, looking at both his son and his daughter. Let's do this."
Chrissy squeezes her father's hand. AJ says nothing. Inside, the state prosecutor waits with a professional, if sympathetic, smile on her face. The interview takes several hours. At one point, the prosecutor's aide goes and retrieves the Cunninghams' lunch. Chrissy cradles a styrofoam coffee cup and relives the worst 4 years of her life, while, across a table from her, the state prosecutor takes notes. By the time she's released and AJ takes her place, she's wrung dry. Chrissy collapses in a chair next to her father and curls into his side like a little girl again. Her father wraps an arm around her shoulder and squeezes. The next day, Chrissy slips another note into Eddie Munson's locker. In the wake of her exhaustion, it's difficult to distinguish the irritation from her coming rut, from her nervousness from the day before. All the same, the hours seem to crawl until the final bell rings. Chrissy leaves everything in her locker and all but runs for the comforting Glen, following Eddie's scent until it nearly overwhelms her. She's breathing heavily by the time she finds his picnic table again. He's not there yet. Not that she can blame him, but the space reeks of his malty smell. Chrissy instinctively presses her head against one of the trees at the edge of the clearing. Her mouth starts to water. Her shoulders relax for the first time in nearly 48 hours.
She could live here, she thinks. She could scent these trees, but otherwise preserve Eddie's scent, just to retreat here on the days when the world outside grows too oppressive. Too much. She walks a circle around the edge of the clearing, almost without thinking about it, then plops herself down at the picnic table to wait. And she waits, and waits, and waits. She can hear the after-school bell in the distance, knows that she's running out of time. But the clearing, despite its consistent scent, remains empty save for her. Chrissy frowns into the trees, trying to ignore the sense of dejection down in her stomach. She swings her legs away from the table and waits, wondering if he'll materialize out of the woods, apologizing for running late. But he doesn't. Chrissy closes her eyes. At cheer practice, she is consistent and effective as she's ever been, maybe even more so than usual. But Madison shoots her a knowing look on their drive home, and Chrissy is left anchorless. She picks up the packages that arrived on her doorstep and mopes her way inside, ignoring the curious look her dad shoots her before they start making dinner. It's not until later that evening, when her dad's locked himself in the den and AJ is fiddling with his NES, that something clicks. It's a Tuesday. Eddie's at the hideout on Tuesdays, playing a show. And in the past, he's invited her. Chrissy sits on the edge of the stairs, her neck itching, her rut closing in. And she makes a choice. Dad? She calls, knocking gently against the den door. I'm going out. After a moment, the door slides open, and she sees her father with a book in hand. Jessica called, you know, from cheer, she says. She's having some trouble with the chemistry project that's due tomorrow. I thought I could help. Her father smiles. The keys are on the wall by the back door, he tells her. Give me a call if you end up spending the night. Despite the guilt sitting heavy in her stomach, Chrissy smiles. She goes up on her toes to kiss him on the cheek, then skips away and takes the keys to the family minivan. It's tremendously out of place at the hideout. It's also one of maybe five other cars sitting in the nearly empty parking lot. Chrissy, however, doesn't mind. She puts it in park and sits for a long moment in the driver's seat. She can already hear the sound of the band from inside the bar. For a second, maybe less, she considers turning around. The warmth at the base of her neck is pressing, though, so she unbuckles her belt and steps into the darkness. The bouncer outside of the hideout doesn't bother to ask for her ID as she slips inside. Chrissy sees the way his nostrils flare, though, and watches as his expression turns almost approving. Her shoes stick to the floor as she maneuvers further in, and the scent... Even on a good day, she thinks it might be this strange combination of repulsive and compelling. With Eddie up on the too small stage, though, flanked by the rest of corroded coffin, well, it's not as good as the clearing, but it smells just a little like him. Chrissy takes a deep breath and carefully makes her way to the bar. The five drunks Eddie speaks so fondly of don't even bother lifting their heads as she leans over the lacquered wood and orders a Shirley Temple. Instead, Corroded Coffin's song comes to an end, leaving Eddie to lean in and brush the microphone with his lips.
And that goes out to you, Rick, for at least trying to keep your head up during our set.
There's laughter in his voice, but it's gone ragged, too, from singing backups to the band's lead. Chrissy's so distracted by the sheen of sweat on Eddie's forehead that she nearly jumps at the cool press of her drink as the bartender slides it into her hand. He waves away her attempt to pay with a smirk, then lets his attention drift back to the band.
"Well, it's incredible to play for such a lively audience," Eddie continues, making a show of rolling his eyes. "We'll give you one more before we let you dive back into your drinks in peace. This is Corroded Coffin covering Head Over Heels by Tears for Fears."
The drummer counts them down, and then they're off. The music is different than what she normally listens to. Chrissy closes her eyes, though, and just lets the thrum of it sit deep in her bones. If she listens closely enough, she can distinguish Eddie's backup vocals from the lead's chorus. His voice is all kinds of rough. If she listens close enough, she can imagine how it might sound if it was just the two of them. She shivers, and the bartender shoots her a look. Chrissy opens her eyes to see him raising an eyebrow in her direction. All at once, Chrissy flushes and hides her face in a drink. The bartender smirks at her, but it's not a threatening sort of thing. Up on the stage, though, Eddie stiffens.
His hands don't stop moving, but Chrissy, somehow, hears him miss a note. When she dares to look up, she can see his nose lifted to the air, can see his gaze skittering over the five drunks, the bartender, and her. His mouth drops open. Chrissy isn't proud of the possessive sort of thing that rolls off of her, but it comes in a wave. She squeezes her thighs together as his fingers stutter over the strings of his guitar. The bartender next to her rolls his eyes and mutters something about kids, but Chrissy's too distracted by the music and the sudden darkening of Eddie's eyes to pay him much attention. The air in the hideout seems to grow tight with electricity. One of the drunks even lifts his head and scents. Chrissy resists the urge to bare her teeth at him and focuses on her drink again. She chugs it without quite realizing what she's done and is left clutching a cup full of ice as Corroded Coffin's last cover comes to an end. The audience isn't quite present enough to clap, but she does, setting the glass aside and letting the cold of her hands shake her out of whatever haze it is that she's settled into. The lead singer looks surprised when Eddie steps forward again, but no more surprised than he does by the sound of actual applause.
"Your sympathy is appreciated," Eddie says, his voice shaking ever so slightly.
And, oh, Chrissy inhales and catches some of the chocolate rolling off of him. It's gotten stronger, despite the distance between the two of them.
"That's it for tonight. Make sure not to drink Ken dry. Talking to you, Dave."
One of the men in the crowd flicks the band off as they trudge off the stage, taking whatever moving parts of their set that they can with them. Chrissy manages one last cheerleader wolf whistle before turning back to her drink. The bartender, Ken, she assumes, is still smirking, but it's less at her than it is at the glass he's started to clean. Chrissy meets his gaze when he looks up at her and straightens her spine, despite the shaking of her hands. That gives him pause, albeit not for long. He nods in something like approval, then looks pointedly toward the stage. Chrissy follows his gaze and sees a flicker of light off to one corner.
"I'm not going to stop you,"
the bartender says, answering her unspoken question. Flushing unwillingly, Chrissy slides off of her bar stool. At the last second, she digs into her purse and leaves a handful of bills on the bar top. Ken makes another approving sort of noise as she makes her way through the empty chairs and toward what passes for the hideout's green room. Despite the permeating smell of alcohol and peanuts that sticks to the bar like sweat to the floor, Chrissy can still sense Eddie's post-performance scent from the hall in front of the green room. She nearly stumbles and curls her hand into a fist as she breathes. Idly, she considers turning around, going back out to the parking lot, driving home. But the moment passes. The door to the green room opens and out tumbles Gareth? Garth? Chrissy and the lead singer look at each other in a moment of mutual confusion. It takes less than half a second for Chrissy to scent the alpha coming off him, based on the way his nose wrinkles, alongside his confusion. Chrissy knows that he can smell her, too. He closes the door to the green room before she can step forward, though, and points a single finger in her direction.
"You're the one he's losing his mind about?" he grunts.
Chrissy balks. She doesn't want to bring her arms up and across her chest, but she does, rounding her shoulders forward in an attempt to make herself small. Her nerve is waning by the second.
I just wanted to say hi," she manages, ignoring the way the beast in the back of her skull begs to differ.
Gareth raises an eyebrow, but he doesn't push her on it. He keeps a reasonable amount of space between the two of them, but the stance he takes on is distinctly protective.
"He's been through a lot of shit, Cheer Queen," he says,
and there's no mistaking the derision in his voice, but it's a resigned sort of thing.
"Don't come here expecting to use and lose him. I'll know."
Chrissy growls on instinct, defensive and hurt. Gareth only looks at her, an alpha confident in his territory. The door behind him squeaks. Both Chrissy and Gareth flinch as someone, Eddie, starts to swear on the other side.
"Would you fucking move?" he calls. "I've got shit to do tonight, man. If you're going to get in a fight, can you at least do it in the parking lot?"
Gareth smirks, then steps to one side. Chrissy squeaks as Eddie gives the door one more push, then comes stumbling into the hallway. He rights himself and whirls without seeing her, one hand raised to stick a finger under Gareth's nose. A second later, he whirls back and blinks, shock skittering over his face.
I'll go put the kid in the van, Gareth drawls.
He takes the snare from Eddie's lax hand as Eddie stares. As Gareth passes Chrissy by, he gives her a last meaningful look. Chrissy looks back with as straight a spine as she can manage, then looks at Eddie and waves, just a little awkward.
Princess, Eddie says.
He looks for all the world like she's smacked him in the face. His scent, strong and deep, smells of unspeakable happiness.
I thought Ken had laced our drinks when I saw your pretty face in the crowd. What are you doing back here?
Ken pointed the way, she says. Her instincts may be purring with delight at having him near, but the part of Chrissy that's never done this before, never gone backstage at a show, never been alone in public with Eddie Munson, is turning shy.
I just wanted to say hi. You're really good.
Eddie doesn't flush, not exactly, but he preens at the praise.
Damn right we are, he says with a wolfish grin. It's easy to be good when you're parodying the greats, though. The crowd's a little less receptive on the nights we play our own shit.
He winks at her and fidgets, like he's not sure what to do with his hands. And it doesn't take a genius to see the way the two of them shift closer to one another, almost circling one another in the small space. Chrissy, however, only notices when their shoes knock together. Her white tennis shoes against Eddie's steel-toed boots. The Midwestern fumble that occurs is polite and haphazard. Eddie's hand catches on her arm as she draws back, and her hand catches on his as she rights herself. The contact is a mistake. The hideout is too dank to reek with Eddie's scent, but this unventilated hallway? Chrissy inhales, her skin on his skin, and can smell nothing but the woods and the chocolate malt. Her mouth drops open. Eddie's fingers tighten on her arm. He looks between their hands and her mouth with a kind of wanting panic. It's nearly inaudible, but Chrissy can hear the whimper rising in his throat. You're an Omega, Chrissy murmurs.
It's not a question, but it feels like it should be, if only for the sake of politeness.
She is not, however, feeling all that polite. Her rut is becoming less of a persistent rumble and more of an irresistible force. Eddie whines. Down the hall, Chrissy catches the scent of a familiar, unfamiliar alpha. She bares her teeth and puts all 5 feet 3 inches of herself between Eddie and Gareth, who's now standing in the doorway.
Eddie, Gareth calls.
Not a command, but there's a note of alpha authority underneath it. Chrissy feels Eddie shy away from his bandmate and feels an unnatural stab of victory down in her belly.
You don't have to do anything you don't want to do, she tells him.
Her eyes, she knows, are wide. His scent is intoxicating, but she is not an animal. Moreover, he is not her mate. She wants him to be, wants to ride out this rut with chocolate malt in her nose and her hands in his hair. But Omegas are people. Eddie is a person. And right now he's looking between her and Gareth like they're a math formula he doesn't know how to solve. Chrissy breathes in. It is all but impossible to take herself out of her defensive stance, but she does it. She does it because the scent of Eddie's confusion dulls the draw, doesn't bite back her rut, but makes her feel inadequate. Your Omega is frightened, says a voice in the back of her head. A voice that, for once, doesn't sound like her mother. Comfort him. Make this right. It was good to see you, she says, hearing her own voice as though she's underwater. All of you, she adds to Gareth, and it's even sincere. He looks surprised by the honesty in her tone and scent, but they've pulled back some memories for her, made her remember better days, when her biggest concerns were whether or not her kicks were high enough to make her stand out next to corroded coffins screeching metal. I'm going to go, she adds, even as every ounce of her being screams against the impulse.
You don't have to, Eddie says, behind her.
Chrissy looks over her shoulder and takes him in. He's staring at her with dinner plate eyes gone black with want. His scent is shifting in answer to her own.
She wants.
Chrissy closes her eyes, squeezes her hands into fists, and takes a step away from him. The sense of rejection in his scent is devastating. I know, she says, forgetting for a moment that Gareth, Eddie's alpha, a temporary fix, she doesn't want to think about it, is just behind them. But I've never done this before, Eddie. I want you. Eddie's breath hitches.
Chrissy nearly lunges at him and is saved only by years upon years of practiced self-control.
But not here. Not if you're afraid.
Annie whines. I'm not afraid, he tells her. Just, are you sure?
Me?
Me? There are so many better options, Cunningham. Fuck.
The alpha at the back of Chrissy's mind howls.
You,
she hisses. Gareth clears his throat, but she's already moving into Eddie's space, hesitating only until he nods to brush his hair back from his throat. She presses her nose against the line of him and inhales, winding her fingers through his shirt as she does.
But not here,
she whispers, or maybe she growls, it's hard to say. The effort it takes her to step back is monumental, but Chrissy is proud that she manages in her own way. Eddie looks like he'd like nothing better than to pin her to the ground, but Gareth, it seems, has had enough.
Eddie, he says again.
No alpha in his voice this time, only a friend.
Give her your fucking address and get out of here. Christ, you're going into heat. Jesus, Cunningham, take it easy on him.
He rolls his eyes, but it's an almost friendly sort of thing now. Eddie scrambles for a piece of paper in his pocket, a pen, anything, while Chrissy looks between him and Gareth with something like a smile playing at the corner of her lips. Eventually, she offers Gareth a little finger wave, which he answers with a middle finger and a genuinely friendly smile. Her own smile grows, filling the tiny hallway with the scent that makes Eddie, his fingers already fumbling, shiver. Chrissy focuses back on him as Gareth exits the building, satisfaction curling low in her belly. Eddie stutters, numbers on a street appearing like chicken scratch on a piece of lined notebook paper.
Are you serious about this? Really?
Chrissy reaches up without hesitation. Eddie goes still as she brushes some of his curls back from his face. Not, thank goodness, in terror. Instead, she can feel part of him melt as he presses into her hand, feels the way he stops breathing at her touch.
You smell like milkshakes,
she whispers, carefully closing the space between the two of them. When their shoes brush for the second time, it is entirely and enthusiastically on purpose.
Like malt. Like the woods.
She wrinkles her nose on the last beat and smiles, teeth and all.
And a little like weed.
You're impossible, Eddie whispers.
Chrissy tugs on one of his curls in answer. He whines and she can't help it. She presses a kiss to the line of his jaw, driven entirely by the need to taste, to breathe in, to consume.
Fuck it, Eddie gasps into her hair. Come home with me, now.
Chrissy laughs into his neck, then runs her tongue along his gland. Eddie whines like she stabbed him, and she feels powerful.
I have my dad's car,
she says, winding more of his curls around her fingertips. It's impossible at this distance to ignore the desire to press kisses into every inch of skin available to her. She keeps them feather soft, though, knows that if she pushes too hard that her Omega will.
What?
Chrissy purrs. Eddie keens. How they make it out of the hall, Chrissy can't say. They must make a picture, to say the least. Eddie, mouth half open and panting, her with her arm wrapped around his, and the smuggest look in the world on her face. She pins him to the side of her dad's van the moment they escape the hideout, subconsciously murmuring praise as she goes up on her toes and kisses his cheeks and nose. Eddie's been reduced to wordlessness for perhaps the first time in all the time Chrissy's known him. When she refuses to kiss him on the lips, he whines a noise that could be her name.
Wait, Eddie,
Chrissy says, tapping him on the nose. She comes back down on her soles and feels something giddy rise within her. This isn't anything like the ruts her romance novels told her to expect. There's no fury, no rage. It's an all but impossible pulse in the back of her neck, sure, but she has her Omega here. They are going back to his nest. For the moment, her instincts are content to tease and preen. Eddie, however,
I don't want to wait.
He whimpers, his big hands coming down on her hips.
Cunningham, Christ.
Chrissy gasps as he grinds against her, the hard line of his cock unmistakable against his zipper.
Alpha,
Eddie whispers, like he's never imagined saying it before.
Please.
Chrissy goes back up on her toes and bites a soft spot between his jaw and his neck, near his gland but not quite on it. Eddie makes an impossible noise, and in their proximity she can feel the warmth of his pre-cum spilling from his cock.
Alpha,
Eddie whines again. He's shaking. Chrissy wraps her arms around him and holds him close to her, letting him bow his head low so that his hair serves as a curtain for the both of them. We're going home, Omega, she murmurs. On a whim, one of her hands slips down between the two of them and strokes his cock through his jeans. The satisfaction that rolls through her as he shudders, then comes, primed and needy, blots nearly every other thought from her mind. Eddie swears in her ear and clings to her like he'll die if he doesn't. Chrissy hides her smile in the crook of his neck and continues to stroke him even after he's come down. Her hand is ever so slightly sticky, but she knows his pants must be worse. The urge to load him in the back of the van and keep him there is becoming more and more appealing. But no. Nesting. The romance novels might not be right about everything, but the only thing Chrissy wants more than her Omega right now is his nest. Home, she says again, and Eddie, calmed a little, both in the first hour of his heat and in the wake of his orgasm, nods against her skin. The drive to Forest Hills Trailer Park falls victim to what their chemistry teacher might call a temporal anomaly. It is both shorter and longer than Chrissy thinks it should be. Eddie isn't quite dozing in the passenger seat of her dad's minivan, not quite sated as he is at the beginnings of his heat. Chrissy can feel him watching her as she fumbles with the headlights. Halfway through the drive, she reaches out and puts his hand on her thigh, the air between them already thick with the scent of their shared want.
Should have let me get you off there, princess. I would have made it good.
Eddie brings her hand up to his lips and kisses each of her fingers. Chrissy whimpers and nearly drives them both off of the road. She can feel him smiling against her skin without looking at him. The alpha in the back of her mind is both howling in satisfaction and demanding that she park and show him who's really in charge here. But nesting, she reminds herself, her Omega needs a nest.
Been dreaming about this for too fucking long, Cunningham,
Eddie continues. Chrissy inhales sharply and fixes her eyes on the road. She closes them only once, briefly, when Eddie brings one of her fingers into his mouth and sucks.
My alpha, my girl.
By the time they reach his trailer, she's vibrating with the urge to pin him to the nearest solid surface. Eddie smells of deep satisfaction and deeper need. He looks at her with eyes like black gems as she unbuckles her seatbelt and lunges for him. She kisses the laughter and anxious muttering out of his mouth before they've even made it out of the car, tugging on his hair just to hear the way he groans against her lips. Inside, she pleads. The word thrums with alpha command, but comes out one part tender, one part whiny. Eddie scrambles out of the van anyway, but never steps more than a foot away from her as they jog toward the trailer. Chrissy presses the line of her body against his as he struggles with the door, going up on her toes and moving his hair to press kisses to the top of his spine. He's shaking again and swearing as he fumbles with the lock. She wraps her hands around his waist and presses into him, like she could fuse them together if she could. So pretty, she murmurs into his hair. So good.
Fuck, Alpha, this fucking door.
They tumble inside together and nearly forget the key in the lock. Chrissy grabs it before cheer-kicking the door shut behind both of them. The next moment, she has Eddie on his back in the middle of the trailer's living room, has her legs on either side of his hips, and is kissing him like he's the only thing she needs to stay alive. It is manic. It's disorganized. Their teeth knock together as Chrissy struggles out of her shirt. Eddie's necklaces are cold against her skin as she presses the two of them together, her ears pricked to better respond to the way he shivers and whines. She grinds down against Eddie's jeans and feels the length of him, can feel the slick Madison spoke so reverently about, and wants.
Alpha, Alpha, please,
Eddie pleads, his voice is breathless and breaking.
Say my name,
Chrissy hears herself say. The voice doesn't sound like hers, but the need behind it is true.
Say my name, Eddie.
Chrissy, it sounds like she's punched it out of him.
Oh, God, Chrissy.
At the end, the first time he slides into her breaks down into moments. Chrissy remembers tearing his pants down to his knees, remembers tangling their hands together. She remembers whispering sweet nothings in his ear, chasing the scent of his gland and just barely resisting the urge to bite. She remembers Eddie, all good intentions and terrible timing, whispering his fears into her ear, his final, "Are you sure?" driving her to take him all at once, leaving him gasping. It wasn't a punishment, never a punishment. But Chrissy had cradled his face and kissed him with the patience she didn't think her rut would otherwise have allowed for. And she could feel it rising in her, bright and burning and terrible. She remembers the way Eddie's mouth hung open as she rode him, as the hormones in her slick triggered his knot, even as that same slick locked him into place. Chrissy had braced above him, whining in delighted approval when he'd lifted his head to mouth at her tits. One clever hand slipped between the two of them and brushed against her clit. She had all but screamed into the side of the trailer as her pussy contracted around him. When she had managed to open her eyes, she could feel him inside of her, his cum trickling out of her and onto the carpet beneath them. His expression, though. Chrissy stared at his dazed, happy, awestruck face and felt her pussy clench. It won another spurt of cum out of him, made him shiver and writhe. And inside of her, the newly awakened alpha made its satisfaction well and truly known. "Thank you," Chrissy whispers into his hair, her muscles slowly relaxing. Eddie makes a noise somewhere between a laugh and a whine. Chrissy doesn't have it in her to decipher it in more detail. She kisses his ear instead and adjusts as best as she's able to keep them comfortable for the 15 or so minutes her slick will lock them together.
"Welcome to, my castle," Eddie manages a few minutes later.
His voice is still slurred with his heat, but there's a little bit of him back in his eyes again. Chrissy laughs and presses a kiss to the corner of his mouth, careful not to let too much of her weight press down on his chest. Eddie frowns as she hovers over him, then uses one long arm to pull her to him. Chrissy lets out an "ooh" as she goes, but she doesn't fight him. Instead, she's left with her laughter, as Eddie curls into the crook of her neck, grunting as he tries to shift around the place where they're locked together. She doesn't know how long they stay there, curled around one another. But Chrissy is coming to know the call of her rut, and it sits in the back of her throat and draws her eyes to Eddie's mating gland, untouched and perfect. And she'd thought, once upon a time, that she had wanted a family, 2.5 children, the white picket fence, and someone to smile at when they came home from work. She'd thought, from what her mother said, that she'd spend her days being a good Omega and creating a nest that felt more like home than the Cunningham house did. Now, she presses her lips against Eddie's mating gland and feels him shiver beneath her. Chrissy peppers the soft skin with even softer kisses and realizes, somewhat abruptly, that she started to purr. She can feel Eddie staring at her, can smell the shock and happiness and confusion hanging over her like a lead blanket.
"Sorry about the mess," Eddie says a few hours later.
They're locked together again, but blessedly out of the living room. Eddie's bedroom smells like a perfect cocktail of him. Chrissy keeps catching herself purring and has to force herself to stop. As it is, she leans in and presses a kiss to his jawline.
"I gave the maid a week off when I, smelled you in the fucking halls," Eddie chokes.
He likes to babble, she's found. Doesn't seem really able to control it. "You could smell me?" Chrissy asks. She moves her mouth from his jaw and leans forward instead, to better settle against his chest. Eddie shifts beneath her, his hands coming up to her hips on instinct. Chrissy allows him a moment to adjust the both of them, idly dragging a hand through his chest hair as he does.
"Could I? Are you kidding?"
Despite their position, Chrissy still finds it in her to blush. Eddie tries to push himself up onto his elbows, but it's difficult.
"You smelled like heaven, Chris. It was the only thing I could fucking think about. Do you know how awkward it is to try and run Dungeons and Dragons for a bunch of lost fucking sheep when all I can think about is this?"
He motions toward the both of them and pushes himself deeper into her. Chrissy sighs, content, and lets her eyes flutter shut. Eddie groans like he realizes he's made a mistake, even as another gush of cum spurts from his cock.
"I've wanted you for ages," he whines, his voice breaking.
"But you're rut. Fuck, Cunningham. Fuck." She can feel it too. However they work, they are ludicrously compatible. She starts to rock against his hips and watches the coherency fall from his lips. Chrissy silently thanks years of flexibility training as she adjusts her shoulder to better reach down between the both of them. It's difficult to reach his knot at this angle, but she manages, rubbing her thumb in circles until he's shaking beneath her.
"Good boy," she murmurs, blissful with control and peace.
Eddie's mouth falls open.
"Going to fill me up like a good Omega?"
She rocks down again, her rut roaring in the back of her mind.
"You're so good, Eddie. You're doing so well."
And she knows that her own cum only makes him more sensitive, knows instinctively that the combination of her fingers on his knot and her rut against his hips could keep them here for hours if she let it. She lifts her head and loses herself to the feel of him beneath her, bouncing on his cock and relishing the fullness of it all. She startles only once when his hand comes up off the floor and presses gently against her clit. He's a sweaty, sobbing mess. His hand stutters with involuntary twitches, like the rise of it was unintentional. He doesn't, however, move his fingers, knows he doesn't have permission to. Chrissy bares her teeth and sings out her approval. Eddie takes the sound for the permission it is, and moments later she's pulsing over his cock. He follows shortly after, her name on his lips like a prayer, and his cum shooting deep inside of her. His arms come up around her almost immediately when she collapses, breathing heavily in his ear. They hold each other like that for a while, like they can shield each other from the world outside of the trailer. And in a way, it works. As Chrissy starts to doze, life seems to be nothing more than the rise and fall of Eddie's chest beneath hers. Her knowledge base on the general care and keeping of Omegas may not be, well, vast, but Chrissy's observational skills are second to none. Partner that with Eddie's inability to be quiet for more than a few minutes at a time, and she develops an action plan rather more quickly than she might have otherwise. She arranges and rearranges her priorities as they both doze, settled half on Eddie's too small mattress and half on the floor. The scent of it all is perfect. It's rich but not overwhelmingly sweet, well-rounded enough that Chrissy can roll it over her tongue without ever getting sick of it. A gush of wet slicks her thighs. Chrissy sighs into Eddie's neck and feels him nuzzle against her in his sleep. The surge of protective instinct that overtakes her is almost as powerful as her want. She positions herself between him and the door, despite knowing that whoever comes into this trailer is only going to have his best interests at heart. After several seconds of furious snuffling and rearranging, Chrissy returns her mind to her list. She needs to get in touch with her dad. She somehow needs to get the car back to him without leaving Eddie for more than a few minutes at a time. She also needs to apologize for the way it now smells like her. It's the most important factor on her list, sure, but it's also the one she wants to address the least. So she sets it aside, breaks it down into parts, and chews her bottom lip. Second, well, she's not sure what Eddie's food situation is. Knows, because he's told her, that his uncle will come home in the morning, make breakfast, and then go to bed. Her instincts, however, want to give him everything. Figuring out how to tamp down the urge to buy out the local Applebee's is proving difficult, particularly with the remnants of her own hunger creeping up on her. And thank goodness she's improving, even if the process has been slow. Rut is worse than the busiest month of cheer practice. Chrissy is starving and for once wants to find food, but doesn't feel particularly inclined to leave this bed unless Eddie is right behind her. And finally, Eddie shifts behind her. Chrissy's attention shifts too, falls on the line of his neck and his curls before drifting down to his slowly hardening cock. An idea ticks over in her head. She smiles in the darkness and shifts to better position her head by his hips. She doesn't know how to initiate the conversation about mating. Knows, in general, that it's ridiculous. She barely knows Eddie.
only knows that she doesn't think she can live without his scent and his gentle hands. As her rut begins to stir, she tells herself that the conversation can wait, that if she plays her cards right, there will be more heat spent together, more time, and a better moment to dig her teeth into his mating gland to claim. For now, Chrissy contents herself with nosing at his cock. Eddie rumbles in his sleep, something pleased and confused. Chrissy licks the tip of his cock and watches as his whole body shudders. He opens his eyes and looks down at her, confusion and want warring for priority in his expression. Only when his eyes go wide with recognition, as though he's realized this isn't a dream, does Chrissy take him into her mouth.
Fuck.
His voice is ragged with sleep and heat. Chrissy closes her eyes and shakes. She knows, just as he knows, that she'll be on top of him before this is through, that she'll milk him and hold him and call her Omega before he drifts into something like sleep again. For now, though, she runs her tongue along the vein on the underside of his cock, then slips her hand between his legs and toward his knot. As she rolls it between her fingers, his thighs come up tight on either side of her head. She is flooded, instantly, with him. Chrissy feels her eyes start to water, but can't imagine a world where she takes her mouth off of his cock. Feels, in her heart, that even if she were to try, she couldn't manage it. Instead, she takes him deeper, using her free hand to grip his thigh and press him more tightly against her. She only stops when he starts to squirm beneath her, his running dialogue reduced to nothing but her name and a desperate,
"Please, please, please."
He all but screams when she takes her mouth off of his cock, but his confusion turns into relief as she positions herself over him. "Good morning, Omega," Chrissy whispers in his ear. Eddie's hands squeeze her hips as she settles down on him again, her eyes fluttering as she goes.
Good morning, Chrissy. Oh, fuck,
he manages. Chrissy smiles and licks his mating gland again, drenching herself in his scent. Eddie shudders. Chrissy moves her hand to play with her own clit until a gush of her pleasure drenches his cock. Eddie's spine goes rigid. She sighs, happy, as his cum fills her again.
Am I dead?
He asks a few minutes later, pressing his lips to her collarbone as he does.
Because if this isn't heaven, I can't fucking think about what's supposed to come next.
You're alive, Chrissy tells him, playfully flicking his side as she does. There's laughter in her throat and enough joy in this room that her to-do list, her plans, all flit out of her head. She nips at Eddie's jaw instead and feels him shift beneath her, happy. They'll worry about the logistics, the birth control, her father, everything, later. For now, Chrissy lets herself drop into a doze with a smile on her face. The morning her rut comes to an end, Chrissy wakes and stares at the ceiling of Wayne Munson's trailer with something almost like dread curdling in her stomach. Without the pressure of her rut at the back of her neck, her memories, her mother's trial, her homework, everything, creep back in and threaten to make it difficult to breathe. Underneath her chin, though, Eddie, her Omega, snuffles. Chrissy presses her nose into his hair on instinct and lets the familiar scent of sex and malt and boy bring her comfort. It takes her a moment longer than she cares to admit to realize that he's awake too. His grip on her tightens as she shifts, but the scent of his heat has dissipated.
So, princess, he says into the quiet. What now?
His voice sounds small. Despite the lack of rut, Chrissy feels the instinctive urge to protect, rearing up in the back of her head. She cradles him and feels a shudder go through him as they cling to the moment. Now, she says, careful to keep her voice at that place between gentle and firm, I'm going to make you breakfast. You're going to lend me a shirt, and we're going to drive to school. It's Friday, right? She feels Eddie hesitate, then shrug. He buries himself deeper into her collarbone. The air around him, Chrissy realizes, smells a little like fear. A little like awe, too, but the fear stink rapidly overwhelms the positive notes. What are you afraid of? Chrissy whispers. Eddie snorts, all bravado.
Nothing. Doesn't make any sense to be afraid, so why should I be afraid? Not a coward.
He mutters the last of this into the softness of her skin, and Chrissy can taste the tone of it. He thinks it's a lie. Chrissy tangles her fingers in his split ends and lets the moment sit. Slowly, the pieces of the puzzle begin to come together. When she figures it out, she slips a finger beneath Eddie's chin and gently lifts his gaze. There aren't quite tears in his eyes, but she can see the thread of them. He's tucked them behind something hard, though, something like a bitter laugh. It almost makes her hesitate. But the voice in the back of her head finally sounds like her own instead of her mother's, and so Chrissy lets her instincts guide her to bravery. "Eddie Muntzen," she says, and yes, her voice is shaking, but her body feels like her own. "Come and eat breakfast with me." There is no alpha command in her voice. The mere concept of eating breakfast is some sort of strange joy. She thinks, this morning, she might be able to stomach something. Chrissy, however, finds that she is not done. And I know you're probably sick of me," she says, her voice softening a little. "But would you like to go on a date soon?" Eddie blinks at her. The moment between them stretches like well-chewed taffy until Chrissy feels her courage buckle. The same moment it does, though, Eddie moves forward. Chrissy's arm ends up pinned between the two of them as he pulls her to him, tucking her head into his collarbone for once. Chrissy squeaks as she goes, but she lets him rock them together and listens, in turn, to the slightly manic laughter bubbling in his throat.
"You want to go on a date?"
he asks. His scent fills the room, blindingly happy, like he was in the hall of the hideout.
"Like a fucking date? Date with me?"
Chrissy nods from her spot near his throat. "Yeah," she tells him. "I really, really do." Eddie laughs. It is long and loud and inescapable. Despite the way her hands are shaking, Chrissy feels herself start to laugh too. There's joy in this little room, precious and fragile. They hold it between them as Eddie nods, until Chrissy feels something wet like tears fall onto her head.
"Yeah, okay, princess," Eddie tells her. "I'd fucking love to go on a date with you."
Chrissy beams and does her best to gather him close, feeling all the while like her heart's about to burst from her chest. Above her, Eddie is shaking out of his skin. He does his best to keep his tears quiet, but he knows he's going to get snot in her hair if he's not careful. Fortunately, he suspects that his alpha's not going to care, because he knows, and she probably knows too, that he can use it as an excuse to herd them into the shower together. For now, though, the love that fills up the room overwhelms him, and he lets some small part of him, a walled-off part deep in his heart, fall victim to Chrissy Cunningham's siege. There is one last detail to deal with as they stumble out of the trailer. It's one they only speak of in whispers, but it comes up all the same. Because Chrissy may have ideas about family, but she is still young. So Eddie gives her a pill out of his lunchbox before they leave the Muntzen trailer. He looks not ashamed as he passes it over, but just a little wary. Chrissy holds it between her fingers and listens as he explains, as he tells her stories, but not names, of people who've come to him, looking for ways to put off pups. Chrissy studies the cut of the pill and drinks it with the orange juice in the fridge. She feels only a touch of regret. Based on the way Eddie fits his hand to her hip, though, she knows that there will be other ruts to come, other heats. Even if he doesn't know it yet, from his smell and his hesitance, Chrissy Cunningham makes her own choices these days. And she's chosen him. He drives her to school. She wears his shirt. The looks she gets from the cheer team range from approving and pleasantly scandalized. The looks from the basketball team are worse. Jason tries to catch her at lunch with his bleach-rich smell, but a freshman intercepts him. Chrissy lets the smell of her disinterest roll off of her as the curly-haired boy in the hellfire shirt guides her toward the table where Eddie reigns as king. "He smells like you," the boy says, one part wry and another part delighted. "Aren't you too young to be able to smell that?" Chrissy says, glancing around the lunchroom for her brother. The boy, Dustin, snorts and rolls his eyes. The kids at the table, and Eddie's bandmates, now that she looks more closely, all consider her with a mix of interest and confusion, but no one says a thing as she moves to take the seat to Eddie's left. He stands and pulls it out for her with a broad grin, preening like he didn't spend the better part of breakfast trying to fuse the two of them together. Chrissy flushes at the memory before she slides primly into the seat. She starts as she hears a familiar groan of disapproval. AJ appears from out of the lunch line and rolls his eyes at the sight of her as he approaches the table.
"Eddie," he whines. "Her? Really?"
Chrissy stifles a laugh as Eddie raises an eyebrow.
"Got a problem with my girl, Fresh Meat?"
"Yeah," AJ snarks back. "She's my sister." For a second, Eddie's impervious expression cracks. Chrissy catches his eye as he glances at her and manages not to giggle, but only just. "Hi, AJ," she says, offering her brother an awkward wave. AJ flicks her off with an exasperated expression, and it breaks her. Chrissy breaks down into helpless laughter as the rest of the table piles on her brother, demanding to know whatever it is that he thinks he knows.
"Kelmvor the Glorious is your little brother?"
Eddie mutters, his surprise hidden beneath the rest of the table's uproar.
"He didn't mention?"
"Didn't say a thing,"
Eddie says with a huff. Chrissy snorts as he crosses his arms over his chest and wonders idly if she shouldn't feel offended. Across the table, though, she can see her brother turning pink under the attention of his new friends and decides on a whim to let it go. He explains later, on their ride home, that another one of the freshmen, Lucas, had gotten a lot of flack for joining up with the school's basketball team, that he hadn't wanted his new friends to make fun of him. Chrissy lets herself feel a sting of hurt and tells him as much, but she bumps his shoulder as they make their way inside anyway. Madison kindly ignores them from the driver's seat, but she gives Chrissy the stink eye until Chrissy agrees to meet her at the mall to talk about, as Madison puts it,
everything.
Walking into her father's home is like breathing for the first time in a long time. Eddie's clearing and the Munson trailer had brought their own kind of comfort. But Chrissy smells her father's scent and feels at peace. He's waiting for her and her brother in the living room, his book cradled in his lap even as he rereads the same page. AJ drops his book bag by the door and runs to the NES. Chrissy holds her book bag by one lone strap and melts as her dad stands. They hug in the foyer, Chrissy apologizing, her dad stroking her hair. Chrissy laughs, or maybe she sobs, and feels her father's chest shake as the main theme to AJ's Commando echoes off the walls. Across town, her mother's house sits empty, like a shattered, haunted doll. This place, though, this place feels like home. April, 1991. Epilogue. He feels his heat start to rise somewhere between Cleveland and Indianapolis, like a dull pain in his lower back. Eddie knows that Gareth can smell it too, senses the Alpha's, not discomfort precisely, but wariness as it grows stronger. Corroded Coffin's beta drummer rolls his eyes at the both of them, but doesn't complain as the band detours into Bloomington, Indiana, for the better part of the week. They'll play at the Bluebird and pick up college students on the weekend. Eddie's not worried about them. He has the band drop him off outside of Moira Law School. He slides out of the still-moving van and ignores the cockeyed looks he gets from the staff members, marching out of the office of the vice provost. Instead, he jogs to the front door and props himself up, letting the wind catch the scent of his coming heat while it plays in the curls of his hair. Eddie Munson is not what one might call a vain Omega, but he has had 5 years with an Alpha who adores him. He knows what she likes to see best. Knows, too, that she likes all of him, no matter how absurd that reality still seems. Funnily enough, he smells her before she smells him. She nearly walks past him, deep in conversation with one of the few other female law students part of this year's 1L class. He can't help but grin at the sight of her, hair back, but shorter than it's been in a long time, neat skirt brushing the tops of her knees, arms full of books despite her already heavy backpack. She's never asked, but she is the vanilla to his chocolate, fizzy like flavored Coke, leaving him dizzy for its pop and bang. He knows he goes a little stupid every time he comes home again, knows that the band is used to it and doesn't bother to hide it now, even in front of these law students and all of their puffed-up bravado. One of the nearby alphas lifts his nose, sniffs. Eddie crosses his arms and grins as Chrissy growls, instinctive, and then catches herself in the act. She whirls and nearly knocks one of the nearby betas straight off his feet. Eddie's grin widens.
Eddie!
She doesn't apologize to the student she's bumped into, doesn't even look at them. Her books fall as Eddie opens his arms. Chrissy flies into his embrace, laughter bubbling out of her like a spring. In that heartbeat of collision, Eddie feels something deep inside him settle. He buries his nose in her hair and laughs. Laughs as he breathes in her vanilla scent and feels the weight of her in his arms again.
"Hey there, princess,"
he says, all stage-born bravado and deep, genuine love.
"Been missing me?"
He can smell her rut rising in answer to his heat, feels satisfaction down to his bones at his ability to bring it out of her. Any alphas lingering nearby go into full retreat at the scent of it. Eddie looks at them over Chrissy's head and doesn't bother biting back his smirk. The expression is all teeth. He lets his scent sing his satisfaction and sees more than a few of them slink away in something like embarrassment.
"Always, Eddie," Chrissy says.
She lifts up on her toes and presses a kiss to his cheek, and they both pretend that she's not scenting him, even though it fills Eddie with an unmistakable pride. She doesn't go far when she pulls back, only beams up at him with her hands on his arms. It takes her a long moment to remember her fallen books. When she does, she backs up with a squeak. She rushes to pick them up off the steps, leaving Eddie to laugh before he bends down and helps her. Around them, the rest of the students leaving the hall part like the sea.
"Are you in town for long?"
Chrissy asks, like she can't smell him in the air. Eddie holds out one of her books, Civil Procedure, between his hands with an air of faux nonchalance.
"Gareth found a gig at the Bluebird," he says with a shrug. "Figured you wouldn't mind if I came by."
Chrissy smiles, a helpless thing.
"Never."
Her eyes sparkle as she starts to herd him toward the nearby bus stop. And while he doesn't want to be trapped in a metal tube when his heat is oncoming, he knows from experience that it's the fastest way back to her apartment.
"I'll have to thank Gareth for his flexibility," she says with a wink.
Eddie flushes and relishes briefly in the bond that his wants Alpha and his Chrissy have developed. They're not quite friends and he suspects they never will be, but the friendliness that's risen up between them makes something in his heart spark with happiness.
"Please don't. You'll puff his ego up to the size of the fucking state."
Eddie moves in closer to her as she leans back against the sign for the bus stop, adjusting his leather jacket as best he can, with Chrissy's Civ Pro book still in his hands. As she looks up at him, he sees her playfulness fall away, leaving something he dares not name in its wake. He knows now that she cares about him. Him, not just the malt that he supposedly smells like in the wake of his heats. When they're in the same town, she makes a point of setting up dates. He does too, and gets a kick out of taking her to bars that clash with her neat skirts and gentle complexion. The alphas that try to get too close to him get a sharp surprise when she steps between them, and an even sharper one when they discover she spent the better part of her life cheerleading. Fights are rare, but seeing his alpha defend him always makes his mouth water. Now, though, he reaches up and draws one of the strands of her hair away from her face. Chrissy makes an approving sound in the back of her throat, and there it is, vanilla twilight like a cloud in the air. He leans down, not to kiss her, though his instincts beg him to. Instead, he lets his nose bump against her earlobe, then lifts his head to whisper in her ear.
"Reach into my pocket, princess."
He feels her confusion, but he feels the weight of her trust, too. Her clever fingers brush over his leather jacket until they land on the box he keeps close to his heart. Her touch stutters. Eddie's smile widens. And he's going to do this properly, going down on one knee and actually asking instead of assuming. Now, though, his heat is a heady thing, and he wants her to know his plan, wants her confident and quivering in the knees as he whispers,
"Bite me."
The noise Chrissy makes, he's hard in an instant. Moreover, he is in love. She grabs onto his lapels and drags him to her, happy and compliant in his alpha's grasp. She kisses like she wants to claim him at this fucking bus stop. He kisses her like he'd let her. And this is the life the two of them win for one another. The wolf whistles from Chrissy's classmates and all. Laura Cunningham is in prison. AJ is at Ball State.
Philip Cunningham is selling the abandoned Cunningham house and preparing to move out of Hawkins forever. And Chrissy and Eddie are happy. They're healthier. And most importantly, in Eddie's opinion, and in Chrissy's too, they are together. That's all that matters to him nowadays. The end.